Waiting. We are all waiting for something. We're waiting for that one thing that we think will bring us that true, lasting joy that we've been searching for all along. One of the things that I remember waiting for 26 years was a promising relationship. And where I'm from in the Midwest, by the age of like 22, all of my friends were already married and they were done having kids by the age of 25, and there I am at age 26, still single, waiting, no prospects on the horizon. And to make matters worse, my two younger siblings, they had been in serious relationships. My mom and sister and I would even joke that I was going to be forever alone. And to be honest, I think I had even given up some hope that that a relationship that I had waited for 26 years would ever even happen. And as some of you know, one day in class, I met a guy named Mark at seminary. And I didn't see this one coming. See, the day that I sat next to Mark in class, he thought that I had intentionally sat by him. But really, the chair I normally sat in a couple rows back, one of the legs was just broken that day. And I definitely didn't think twice about him because he would always come to class with this red coffee mug that had hearts all over it and it said in cursive, "I love you" on the front. And I thought, surely if a guy has a mug like that, he's wifed up. Like, he's not single. I still don't really know why you had that mug. So one of the things that I found so unique about getting to know Mark in our relationship was that he was so straightforward and honest. I feel like a lot of times when you're dating, you're just kind of wondering, especially at the beginning, okay, does this person like me as more than a friend, but do they like me as much as I like them, but do I like them more than they like me? And you're just confused and guessing and kind of hoping that you guys are on the same page, and you never really know until you DTR it. That's define the relationship. Well, we had gone on probably 3 or 4 dates, and one day after class, I went out to my car, and I found this note on my windshield. It says, hashtag, I like you. See, I just love this guy. He made it so clear. I knew exactly what he was thinking. Mark was not wasting any time, you can say that. The reality is that he had waited 26 years, too, for a promising relationship. And I think that one of the most common things that I hear people waiting for is a relationship. And it's not just so that they can have a companion or dual income or someone to help them take the dog out at night, but so that they can have joy. That joy that they think they've been missing all along, that one piece that everyone around them is telling, well, once this happens, you'll be happy, promise. I think probably one of the greatest blessings to Mark and I not getting married till we were close to 28 was that we had done some growing up and we had wrestled with individually what it meant to find our joy in Jesus through our singleness. And so we didn't then take that expectation. Oh, we can take the note down, by the way. We didn't take that expectation onto our marriage to bring us lasting and fulfilling joy because obviously it couldn't do that. It's not perfect. Nor are we. Now, our marriage does add a lot of happiness to our lives, of course. But joy and happiness, they are not the same. And our culture often entwines the two. You know, you can find many slogans about buying joy this Christmas season, or if you look online, I saw something that said 40 ways to find joy. What they really mean is happiness. See, because happiness is completely circumstantial. It's based on what is happening to you. So when good things are happening, you feel happy. Like, here's a scenario when I feel happy. So when I get to go to Target for fun, not just like buying toothpaste and stuff, which I think I'm gonna get to go to Target later today as like my treat for preaching. When I get to go to Target just to walk around and to see like all the cute little things that I don't need and end up buying, and I get to Target and I find a good parking spot, and I don't need a close one, I don't mind walking, but what I mean by a good parking spot is that there are no runaway carts just sitting in the middle of it that you don't see until you pull in. And then I go and I walk and I get in the women's department and I see a shirt that's cute and I flip over the price tag to see how much it is and there's a red sticker on it, which means clearance. That is happiness. I feel so happy. But that is not the same thing as joy, unfortunately. See, joy, it transcends circumstance. It is something much deeper. So that no matter what happens to us, good or bad, joy can remain untouched. It's kind of odd to wrap your head around. See, I think very few people actually have joy. Many of us can experience happiness, but I think Americans in particular, we have a hard time with joy. And it's largely because we live in a culture that's so dependent on what happens to us, what we feel or our emotions, and what we have. Consumerism, materialism. But joy and happiness are not the same thing. So if true joy can't be found in a relationship, or a trip to Target, or other things like making the right amount of money or getting the job that you want, then where can we find it? Sunday school answers, please. Okay, I think one person had the answer. It's Jesus. Of course it's Jesus. We're in church. But do we really even understand the joy that Jesus offers us? And I wouldn't blame you if you don't quite, because the joy that we read about in the Bible, it's often intertwined with unexpected things, like things that don't naturally go together, like suffering and sorrow and pain. We see weird instances of joy in the middle of those. That was Israel's experience. That was how they first glimpsed God's promise of joy for them. See, Israel, it was God's chosen nation. You can kind of think of them as like a special family that God had given an assignment to, a special task. But Israel had been naughty. They had disobeyed God, rebelled against him. They had put their trust in neighboring leaders to save them. They had started worshiping other idols. And so in the book of Isaiah, God is talking through the prophet Isaiah to Israel. And he's saying, guys, there's going to be some consequences for your disobedience. You're actually going to be overtaken by this neighboring nation called Babylon, and you're going to be kicked out of your homeland. You're going to go through exile. As you can imagine, some pretty depressing news for Israel to receive. That's like what the first 30 chapters of Isaiah are detailing. And then, sprinkled in, we get these promises and these glimpses of joy that God will bring to Israel when this exile is all said and done. A glimpse into his future redemption. It's kind of surprising. You wouldn't expect it to come there. And so let's read about what God says to the nation of Israel in Isaiah 35. So if you want to turn with me to the free gray Bibles in your seat backs, we'll be on page 496. It'll also be up on the screens. So this is what God says through Isaiah to the nation of Israel of what's to come. The desert and the parched land will be glad. The wilderness will rejoice and blossom. Like the crocus, it will burst into bloom. It will rejoice greatly and shout for joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it, the splendor of Carmel and Sharon. They will see the glory of the Lord, the splendor of our God. Strengthen the feeble hands. Steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance. With divine retribution, he will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened and the ears of the deaf be unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer and the mute tongue shout for joy. Water will gush forth in the wilderness and streams in the desert. The burning sand will become a pool, the thirsty ground bubbling springs. In the haunts where jackals once lay, grass and reeds and papyrus will grow. And a highway will be there. It will be called the Way of Holiness. It will be for those who walk on that way. The unclean will not journey on it. Wicked fools will not go about it. No lion will be there, nor any ravenous beast. They will not be found there. But only the redeemed will walk there, and those the Lord has rescued will return. They will enter Zion with singing. Everlasting joy will crown their heads. Gladness and joy will overtake them, and sorrow and sighing will flee away. So what does all of this mean for Israel? Well, simply put, this was God's way of directing them to the end game.